Chapter 16. Planning for a Great Work. Matthew omits the whole of the first year of the work of Jesus and commences to write from the time he became a follower of Jesus and an eyewitness of what was done. Matthew was not like Luke, who was an educated man, a physician, an artist, and a poet. Matthew was educated, but he was a plain, practical businessman. He was a publican, or collector of customs at the city of Capernaum, where caravans passed from the east to Egypt and from Egypt to the great east. His business was despised by the Jews. The traffic that passed through or was landed there or shipped out had to pay dues, as all who came out or went into the city had to pay toll on the bridges and on the main traveled roads. The high Roman officials farmed out the work to humbler grades of men, but from highest to lowest, they all had a name for covetousness and greed. False entries, illegal duties, and grinding of the people made the whole class of publicans stand in the sight of the Jews with murderers, highway robbers, and common thieves. They were not allowed to testify in their courts, and the whole family was disgraced if one member of it did this work for the Roman rulers. Why, the poorest Jew would almost starve before he would accept alms from a publican, and would actually starve before he would sit at a table with him. The publican, Levi Matthew, was a Hebrew of the Hebrews. He knew of the writings, the history, the law, and the prophecy of his race, excommunicated as he was with all Israelites who were publicans. But Levi Matthew was a good businessman. He not only had to examine people and goods, but he had to keep official records. He had to be secretary, bookkeeper, and treasurer for some high official. His business was full of temptations, but it seems as though he was a sort of hero. He went through the fiery furnace without the smell of fire on his garments. Do you suppose when there came an opportunity to do the same dishonest way other men in his business did, and he took no more notice of the temptation than a duck would of a sprinkle of rain on its back, that he dreamed that 2,000 years from that time you would think of his honesty and uprightness and feel glad for him? We like Levi Matthew. He belonged to the old priestly tribe. He was moderately rich, had good business habits, was unselfish, and was poor in spirit. He is the only one who mentions that he was a despised publican. When the disciples were sent out two by two, Luke says, Matthew and Thomas. But Matthew places the names Thomas and Matthew. He was not talkative. Peter could talk and act and crawfish. But Matthew was like the roots of the tree underground, always working to advantage. His name Matthew may have been given him when he became a follower of Jesus. It means gift of God. Eusebius says that after the ascension, Matthew preached in Jerusalem for 15 years and then went to other nations. He preached to his own countrymen, and his main thought was the recommendation of Jesus the Messiah to the Jewish mind. The Jews were the elect people of God, and the salvation of men were to be of the Jews. They were looking for the Messiah, and in his gospel, Matthew quotes the Old Testament 54 times, while Luke quotes it only 24, and Mark 23 times. Such a man as Matthew must have been interested in the new rabbi. They both hated sham and pretense. Both were honest and sincere, and neither of the two, rabbi nor publican, was swayed by public opinion. Jesus looked right into Matthew's heart, and he liked what he saw there. The little office where Matthew took toll was near the harbor of the town, close by the shore where Jesus often spoke to the people. We have seen Jesus talking with the rich, influential Nicodemus, talking just as earnestly with a Samaritan woman at the well. And now, what does he do? He calls one of the most despised of all the race to become one of his followers and come into the inner circle as a disciple. How he was called, Matthew himself tells. Jesus had healed a man sick of the palsy, and the multitude had been greatly moved. They were afraid and glorified God. And as Jesus went by from where the miracle had been performed, he saw Levi Matthew sitting at his place where he took toll. Jesus said to Matthew, "Follow me." Matthew had perhaps waited for just such an invitation, for he arose and followed Jesus. Just as soon as Matthew could post his books to date, get a formal release from the higher officers, he went with Jesus to learn of him. Do you remember how Matthew celebrated this wonderful change that had come to him? He had a feast in his own house and invited Jesus to be his honored guest. He also invited a large number of his own friends, honest men, but they were other tax gatherers, and all of them were looked down upon by the Jews as sinners, just as though they were gamblers, usurers, thieves, and murderers. How do you suppose Jesus felt when he looked around on that company? There are people in this age who would not accept an invitation to a dinner if only one sinner had been invited, and here was the great rabbi invited to eat with a room full of them. But Jesus came to call sinners to repentance. He told Matthew he would come to the feast, and he went and enjoyed the whole evening with these friends of his new chosen disciple. It was not so very long before Jesus chose his 12 disciples, and Matthew was glad to be one of the 12. In his gospel, Matthew records the discourses of Jesus, and his fine business training gives him ability to record the greatest discourse that ever was given. Luke was a scholar, but he was unable to give but a small portion of what Matthew gives almost at the very beginning of his gospel. The night before the 12 were formally chosen, Jesus gave to special prayer. A great work was to begin. There were great and perplexing problems to be settled. How the work was to begin and who should be chosen to do the work were questions to be answered. Christ, our example, spent the night in prayer. The work he was beginning must go on after he laid down his earthly life. If you had been a young man who had lived 2,000 years ago and had been with Jesus a whole long day when he had spent the time healing the sick, comforting the distressed, making the deaf to hear and the blind to see, you would have gone off into the mountain place at night with Jesus. You would have loved him so that you would have wanted to be near him when he spent the long nights in prayer. Jesus had been a caretaker from his boyhood. It is supposed that while Jesus was a boy, Joseph died. Joseph must have been a just, tender, loving father, for Jesus thought of him whenever he called God Father. There was the mother for the young man Jesus to look after and provide for, so he early learned how to work systematically. Now he must plan for the work of looking after and providing for the souls and bodies of the whole world for all time. No one knew what he was planning to do, he and God. That was all. Jesus must bring all his will, his reason, his experience to bear on this plan. The Pharisees and rulers were growing more and more hostile. He must get his work done before they put him out of their way. So he went off alone to talk with God. Are you going with him? The place where he went this night was a lonely spot. If you can call yourself a son of James and a grandson of Salome, and your name Thomas, we can see you as you turn your father's fishing boats over for a few days to the hired men while you follow the rabbi. You have been with Jesus all day, and boy-like, you wanted to know more about him, so you kept him in sight as he walked away from the Sea of Galilee and on and on and a few miles west of the sea, up the hill of Kern Hattin. There is nothing of the coward about you, Thomas, but as you followed the master, all sounds hushed save now and then the sound of the jackal. You could not forget what had occurred on the sharp, steep north side of the mountain not so very long ago. Herod the Great had driven those desperate robbers and murderers from those caves. Oh, what daring men those robbers were! You remember that they were in the caves high up on the precipice, and the side of the hill from the deep ravine was so steep that Herod's soldiers were lowered in great chests from the top of the hill and fought the robbers from these open chests with fire and sword, robbers so desperate, so fierce, that the leaders asked the privilege of murdering their own flesh and blood. And then when they had killed their wives and children, rather than being taken captive, they leaped into the chasm below. Away ahead of you now is the master, and you wonder if he hears the howl of the jackal and remembers the dreary stories about the terrible north side of this mount, with the top having two peaks like the horns of the saddles at home. Soon the master stopped, and for a long, long time looked up into the clear, cloudless heaven with the great stars shining down like brilliant lamps flickering in the soft summer night wind. After a time, the master knelt on the thick grass, and then you could hear the murmur of his low tones as he talked with God the Father. What did you do then? You listened to the sweet tones that sounded to you like the tones when the water ripples over the stones in the brook. You wondered why he talked so long to God. You folded your outer garment about you, gathered a stone for a pillow, and thought you would rest a while till the master made a sign that he intended to go farther on.